Okay, Kieran O'Donnell joins us in studio. Kieran, how are you keeping? Thanks for calling in.
I'm good, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing very well indeed. Okay. Right, Kieran O'Donnell, of course, is a presenter of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast, and we'll tell you what's coming up on it very shortly. But as is the norm, Kieran's going to run through some of the business stories for us. And news of a LEO workshop, local enterprise office workshop, Kieran.
Yeah, Greg, Donegal Local Enterprise Office will hold its next business information session and grant aid workshop on Friday, May the 19th at 10 a.m. via Zoom. It's regarded as an ideal opportunity to get a sense of the enterprise supports that exist and to consider how they may help to develop a business. More info, contact LEO Office.
All right. The Chamber President's Lunch is coming up next month.
Yeah, you flagged it last week on your own show, Greg. The President of the Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce, Fionnuala Rabbitt, will hold her President's Lunch in the Radisson Blue Hotel in Letterkenny on Friday, June the 9th. The keynote speaker will be Sinn Féin leader Deputy Mary Lou MacDonald, and this will be followed by an investment in the North West panel discussion that will be moderated by a certain Greg Hughes.
Wow. They must be paying the big bucks.
Well, here we go. Tickets are priced €45 for chamber members and €55 for non-members.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to get an insight from Sinn Féin leader Deputy Mary Lou MacDonald, who may well be the next Taoiseach, if not next time round, into the future. So it's a good opportunity for her to hear from people in the business community here right across the region, and also for that to be a two-way conversation, Kieran.
Yeah, very much. Look, it's an annual event held by the Chamber. As you say, it'll be interesting to see what Mary Lou MacDonald's take is for the North West. And as you say, an election is on the horizon. Sooner, I would say, possibly rather later.
Yeah, not so long ago, I had the pleasure of my first stay at the Shandon Hotel in Dunfanaghy. Absolutely stunning. Not surprising then that its manager is on a shortlist for an award.
Yeah, Carolyn Harrison, who is general manager of the Shandon Hotel in Dunfanaghy, has been shortlisted for the Hotel Manager of the Year award, Greg. Carolyn beat off a stiff competition to make it through to the final stages of the prestigious Irish Hospitality Awards for 2023, and we wish her well in that.
Yeah, well done, Carolyn. Okay, Donegal ETB funding?
Yeah, Donegal ETB has received €220,000 from the Department of Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science for its Further Education and Training Service, and we do feature that section of the Donegal ETB from time to time on the podcast, Greg. The allocation is part of a €5.3 million allocation to support educationally disadvantaged learners in accessing and participating in community education.
Yeah, we talked about people being in the running for an award, a really nice award for a bar in Falkara.
Yeah, the Strand Bar and Restaurant in Falkara has been named Best Traditional Gastropub of the Year at the Yes Chef Awards. Owned by Michael McClaffrey, Strand Road opened in July 2021. It can seat 100 people inside and another 100 in the beer garden. So congratulations and well done to all involved.
Sounds lovely. Right, OK, let's focus then on what's coming up on this week's pod.
Yeah, Greg, on this week's show, I'm joined by the owner of Burger Jacks in Milford, Kieran Blaney, and the head of innovation for the new Alpha Innovation Centre in Letterkenny, Kevin Sexton. Kieran Blaney initially set up the business at Lag Service Station in Milford in July 2019. The takeaway outlet at Milford Retail Park was opened in February 2022, and a few months later, Burger Jack's 45-seater restaurant opened next door. In this clip, Greg, Kieran talks about the difficulty in recruiting chefs and what he's offering to make the role at Burger Jack's more attractive.
Staff has been an issue, in fairness. It was grand, we're in the shop. Like, we had a very small team. It was me and my father and Hugh there and my sister and my brother would step in and give us a hand, big weekend, stuff like that. But since we moved here now, it's grand getting staff for the restaurants. The hardest thing to get chefs. And I mean, I don't know, there's a lot of people in the industry, a lot of chefs in the industry left it during COVID, I find. Or they're away on, they're doing different things and stuff like that there. So it is, that's the one kind of hard thing to get.
And is there any way around that?
Well, I suppose what we've been kind of advertising now at the minute is, because I know hospitality, I know it's very unsociable. It's very unsociable hours and stuff like that. So what we've kind of been thinking about is offering a 4-day working week. So I mean, you'd have your full-time hours, you'd have your 40-plus hours within them 4 days, but you would still have your 3 days off. And then we've even gone as far as offering one weekend off a month. Now, that's off-season. That'd be without June, July, August. But you would have, you'd have your week, one weekend off a month, you'd still have your full-time hours, and you have a 4-day working week.
All right, there you have it. Decent advertisement there as well. And he's not the first person I've heard from within that general industry that's having to come up with different ways to attract the staff.
Yeah, but when I asked him the question, he had a very good answer, and I suppose he's looking for a solution to the problem. But listen, a young man, he's coming 25 this year. He has 10 people employed there, 5 part-time, 5 full-time. When they opened the takeaway in the new retail centre, they had the option of taking over a second unit, which they did. They put a restaurant into it, and things are going very well for them.
Right, your next guest on the show?
Yeah, the Innovators Under 35 Europe Festival, Greg, was held last Thursday and Friday in Gweedore, and at the end of the final session on Friday afternoon in GTEC, I caught up with the head of innovation for the new Alpha Innovation Centre in Letterkenny, Kevin Sexton. Here, Kevin talks about the new €20 million Alpha Innovation Centre, which is scheduled to open in Letterkenny in May 2025.
So the Alpha Innovation Centre, which will open its doors in May 2025, so about 24 months from now, is about a 60,000 square feet development of two iconic buildings, a public realm just off the Port Road, where the old ESB Centre would have been, if anybody remembers that, and then opening all the way down to the Pierce Road. So a really iconic sort of, I describe it as almost like a Google campus in the centre of Letterkenny. And the idea of this centre is to bring businesses out of the weeds, you know, once a week, once a month, bring them through a programme of innovation, teaching them the basics about identifying problems, framing problems, seeing opportunities, measuring opportunities, whether they're investable, whether they're, as I call them, whether they're problems worth solving or kind of nice to haves, whether the vitamin pill or the painkiller for businesses. And so the centre will be about 60,000 square feet, two buildings, and the Alpha building itself is about 20,000, just under 20,000 square feet.
No, massive a development, both physically and I suppose in terms of potential there, Kieran.
Yeah, 8 stories, €20 million, massive investment by Donegal County Council, Bic Northwest, Leo, Enterprise Ireland are all involved as well. So Kevin talked about the building being a process rather than a building, and he said it's going to be something like a Google centre located in the middle of Letterkenny. So it's a massive game changer for businesses. The approach is to get them in, get them up on a story as they're developing and progressing on the process of learning and innovating and adapting. And they're keen to work with people who are hungry to innovate. Mm-hmm. And the biggest challenge that Kevin believes lies ahead is actually catering for the demand.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's not a bad complaint either, I suppose. The full interviews with Kieran Blaney and Kevin Sexton are available to download right now at highlandradio.com or stream off the site or wherever you get your podcasts, as long as it's Spotify or iTunes. And the show's broadcast on air as well, Kieran, isn't it?
Yeah, after the 6 o'clock news, Greg, on Sunday evening.
And if anyone wants to get in contact with you.
Yeah, drop me an email, please. businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
All right, Kieran O'Donnell, thank you very much.
Good morning,
indeed.
Greg.
That podcast, as we mentioned, live for you right now. We'll be back with more. Kieran, actually, will be back with us next Wednesday. It's time now for Wellness Wednesday. We are highlighting Crohn's and colitis, Ireland inflammatory bowel disease, and the importance of not being too embarrassed to get bowel symptoms checked out. It's ahead of World Inflammatory Bowel Disease Day on May 19th. Crohn's and Colitis Ireland is launching its symptoms checker, but we'll go through all of that in a moment. We've two guests to welcome onto the programme. We'll say good morning first to Alana McGrory from Lahey. Good morning, Alana. Thank you very much for joining us.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good, and it's good to have you on the show. And we'll start, if that's okay, with Professor Anthony O'Connor, consultant gastroenterologist. Good morning to you, Anthony. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, Alana.
Right, so talk to us first about, is Crohn's disease the family, or is Crohn's and colitis separate? Or maybe you could explain that for us, Professor.
Sure. So the family of diseases are called inflammatory bowel disease. And within inflammatory bowel disease, there are two main subtypes, Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, which share an awful lot of things in common, but do also have some differences. For example, Crohn's disease can affect you anywhere in the gut from the lips to the anus, whereas ulcerative colitis just affects the colon. So inflammatory bowel disease is the umbrella term for these conditions. And even within those conditions themselves are sort of an umbrella of sorts too, because one can have Crohn's disease that affects just the colon or the colon and the small bowel, or can affect the stomach, can affect some the skin in some instances, whereas ulcerative colitis, you can sometimes have ulcerative colitis that's just limited to the rectum. Other times it can be all the way around the bowel, and other times it can be somewhere in between. So there's huge variation. No two patients with IBD are the same. I think that's an important thing to note.
And how common is it? Because I saw some statistics that would suggest it's not incredibly common, but I know loads and loads of people, and not an exaggeration, with either Crohn's or colitis. Now, I don't know if that's geographical or pure coincidence, but it does seem at odds with some of the instances per 1,000 statistics that I've seen in the past. But maybe you might run through that for us, Anthony.
So we estimate that in the Republic, there may be between 35 and 40,000 people who suffer with inflammatory bowel diseases. One can be diagnosed with inflammatory bowel disease at any age. The youngest person I've seen is 3 months. The oldest person I ever diagnosed was 90. But the most common age group to be diagnosed would be sort of between 16 or 30. So lots of young people would know somebody with inflammatory bowel disease, for instance. But you know, the diseases are not uncommon. I mean, we've got 2,500 inflammatory bowel disease patients here in Tala Hospital alone. So you know, they are a common disease, and everybody listening in today, even if they don't know it, knows somebody with inflammatory bowel disease.
Yeah, is it likely that there are many people living with an inflammatory bowel disease undiagnosed, or does the discomfort and disruption come to a point that eventually everyone will be diagnosed?
I hope we're getting better at that now. But if you look back to the 90s, there was a study done in Canada which said that the average person with inflammatory bowel disease suffered from somewhere between 9 to 11 years before having a diagnosis, which is crazy when you think of it. Now, we don't have more up-to-date evidence than that. But I think we're getting better. But I think because of the taboo that people have about talking about their bowel habits and the unpleasantness associated with that, I do think it's still unnecessarily deters people from seeking help from their family doctor about symptoms that are worrying them with respect to their bowels. And I think that's one of the main things we want to address with this campaign.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not just in this area either. There are many medical conditions that we're only starting to talk about or learn to talk about now in any meaningful way, which is really important. Alana, you were diagnosed with Crohn's disease in 2016. Young, I'd imagine. I'm not making a judgment on your age, but I'd imagine you were young. Because you're young now.
I was 17. Okay. Yeah, no, I was 17. So I'm coming up on my 7th anniversary, as we call it.
Yeah.
30th of May. So when I was diagnosed, I was on the shorter end of things, as you call it. I was diagnosed in less than 3 months when I first had symptoms, which was great. What kind of complicated mine was I had just come back from a school tour to Spain. So everybody thought, oh, you're just abroad. Do you know, it'll pass over yet. And just, it never did. And just bowel symptoms mainly, and abdominal cramps, and weight loss was my biggest one. I lost a stone in 6 weeks, which was like a lot. And like, I wasn't heavy to start with.
I know what you mean. Yeah, it was worrying for you. And was there quite a quick onset, or on reflection, had this been coming on for a while, a non-medical way of putting it, if you know what I mean? But if you reflect back, were there issues before you sort of went down the diagnosis path?
Yeah, so I suppose one of the symptoms that's less known about is the fatigue that you get with an immune condition, so with Crohn's. So like when I was younger, I would just get a bit tired more quickly than other kids, and just like, oh, like I'll join back in later kind of thing. And yeah, so fatigue was kind of something I had all the time really when I was younger. And then I was also a tad anemic, and that was because of the malabsorption through the gut, like you weren't absorbing iron. So even though I was eating like the right foods, it wasn't being absorbed
correctly.
You weren't
getting the benefits from them, yeah.
Yeah, so I suppose that was probably going on for a while beforehand, but then suddenly just the abdominals and like your gut just not behaving the way it should. And it got to this stage where I couldn't even keep water down. My stomach was even like, this is just not this, like it wasn't having anything of it basically. So then we'd been back and forth in and out of Sligo General, back with the GP, like, look, like what's going on here? Like, you know, it's just
So what, after diagnosis, as you say, yours was a short enough process. But in terms then of treatment, and thankfully, if I read correctly, your disease is now under control and you're able to manage it well. Is that a process that has to be gone through to find out what's right for you, or talk to me about your personal experience?
Yeah, so I suppose at the start, everybody kind of starts with a course of steroids to just really get us back to baseline. So I did an 8-week course of steroids. And then you try with diet first. That didn't really work. After about a month, we were kind of going back to the symptoms. And then I was on a drug called Imuran for about 6 months by itself. And then at this stage, I was in my leaving cert year. So kind of mock time kind of things started going downhill again. So I'm back on steroids to kind of just help me through the end of the year. And then once I finished my leaving cert, I started on a drug, Humira, with Imuran. And then that lasted a while. And then eventually it kind of stopped, you know, not really doing the trick again. And then I changed drugs from Humira to Stelara. And then I've also ended up having a colectomy. So like just a part of my bladder was taken out and just joined back together. So at the minute, Stelara is doing the trick. And yeah, we're good. Yeah,
okay. Now, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'll go back to Anthony in a second. The drugs that you take, do they suppress your immune system? So that means, particularly with the period that we went through, that do you feel that you have to be particularly careful, or how does that impact on your life?
Yeah, so I suppose the reason I switched from Humira to Stelara was because I was picking up every cold, cough, sneeze going. I went through a period of like every month I had some kind of a decent cold or cough for at least a week. So that was once to it. So that was one reason I changed the Humira to Stelara. And Stelara like doesn't affect me as much as that, but I still have to be careful. Like if I'm ever going on, like say an airplane or something, like I'd wear a mask, or going into hospitals, I'd always have a mask on. GP, always have a mask on, because you never know what you're going to pick off anywhere.
Yeah. And Anthony, how typical is Alana's story? Like in terms of, you know, can you have a mild case or more severe, or would Alana's experience be somewhat typical?
Alana's experience will be very typical of a lot of the patients I see. Now, as I said, there is huge variation. You can get mild cases, and particularly we notice people who are diagnosed, you know, maybe from middle age onwards, tend to have a slightly milder disease course than people who are diagnosed like Alana was when she was 17. But again, that's not a universal experience either. I suppose one of the things that really resonated with me from what Alana said was when she spoke about fatigue. And it's a huge issue for patients with IBD. And it's one that as doctors and nurses engaged in IBD, we could do better at helping people with. We don't have an awful lot of evidence-based interventions for that. And it's my particular research interest, so it's a bit of a hobby horse of mine. But one of the things about IBD is even when the disease is in remission, about 40% of IBD patients will still continue to experience levels of fatigue that are similar to somebody who's gone through chemotherapy. Yeah. Okay, so that's bad fatigue. So definitely it's an area we need to do better on. But certainly Alana's story is very, very typical, but also individual to her, because, you know, no two patients with IBD are the same. But, you know, we would hear a lot of that. About 65% of people with Crohn's disease will have some part of their bowel resected at some point over the course of their disease. She's been through a couple of different medications. It's typical. And thankfully, things seem to be on a good keel for her at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of early diagnoses, you say many people may have to have an operation at some point. But how important is early diagnosis in this disease?
It's hugely important. So if you look at the medications we have for the disease, and Alana has listed some of them, almost all of them will work better in the first year or two of the disease than they will in somebody who's had the disease for 5 to 10 years, because at that stage scarring has become established and the medication won't reverse scarring. So it all becomes a little bit more complicated the longer you go on. So in terms of early diagnosis, what you need to do is be vigilant about symptoms. Don't be shy about talking to your GP about these symptoms. They will have heard an awful lot worse that day than you talking about your bowels, okay? The other thing that makes people nervous is they think if they go to their doctor with bowel complaints, they'll end up having to have a colonoscopy. First of all, a colonoscopy is as terrible as most people think it is. And secondly, We now have non-invasive tests, so we can look at your blood and look at your stool itself, measure the amount of inflammation in both of those. And a lot, an awful lot of people we can reassure just by having a look at their poo and a look at their blood and not finding any inflammation there. So you know, the message really has to be, you know, go and talk to your doctor if you have these symptoms, get checked out.
And how good are we at this stage in medicating long-term? Is it a case of finding the right drug and you can settle on that, or is it kind of whack-a-mole as the body might adjust and the benefit of a particular drug wane? So where are we at in terms of the long-term management of inflammatory bowel disease?
I think you've put it very well there. And I think, unfortunately, one of the issues we have is none of the drugs work on everybody, but we've got a raft of drugs now that will sort of work really well on about 30 to 40% of people and will have a quite positive impact on about another 30 or 40% of people, which leaves you with about 20, 30% of people who won't respond to any given drug. Okay, so we're still trying to figure out, I think, you know, where to place these drugs, looking at combinations of different drugs. So that's where a lot of the research focus is in IBD medicine at the moment. And also, again, something Alana touched on, looking at medications that are less likely to cause side effects like immunosuppression and things like that. So the unmet needs, I think, are twofold. One is that for, you know, good, reliable drugs that don't have many side effects that work on the vast majority of people, that's an unmet need. And the second, I think, is, you know, not necessarily drugs, but interventions around quality of life. But I mean, just to give you an example, I mean, we now have, I think, something like 11 or 12 biologics for inflammatory bowel disease. When I started off as a doctor, we had one and then we had two the following year. So, you know, the amount of medication we have to address the problem are huge. The surgeries we can carry out are also better and more sophisticated than they were 20 years ago. So things are improving all the time, but there's still a way to go.
Yeah, and I suppose in a way, because it is so common, there's going to be more focus on coming up with alternatives and better ways of doing things. I'm going to come back and focus for the last part, if that's okay, with you in a moment, Anthony, about what people need to look out for. But Alana, in terms of your, do you have to monitor your diet quite closely now? Is that part of living with this disease?
Yeah, so I suppose food intolerances can alter. So you need to keep like a basic food diary as such. So at the minute, my intolerances are mushrooms, chocolate, and I mean chocolate as in normal chocolate. I can eat white chocolate fine, so the cocoa, that's the problem. Beef, berries with seeds, nuts are all my no-goes at the minute. But that has changed every couple of months since I've been diagnosed.
Right, okay. And you studied pharmaceutical science with drug development at the ATU there in Sligo. And your thesis focused on Crohn's disease. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my thesis was a look back at the current pipeline for stem cell treatments for Crohn's disease, of which there is now only one on the market in Japan. So this would be for people who have tried every drug under the umbrella and are still having symptoms, their body's still being scarred. And basically what they would do is take stem cells from liposuction, basically of fat, then they make up the stem cells with the bits that they need, and then they could inject them in either into the lining of their gut or into a fistula, which could be formed from an abscess that has now made a tube basically from your gut to the skin, and they can inject them in to close it up.
Okay. And was your interest in this area as a result of your life experience, or is it a sort of not even a coincidence, but
yeah, so it's a bit of both, I'm going to say. So when I was kind of in TY, so pre-diagnosis, I was thinking about pharmacy as my college degree.
Yeah.
And then just, you know, the points race didn't really help with that. So then I just went pharmaceutical science. And then obviously when you have a condition, you want to find out as much as you can. Mm. So like from first year to fourth year, I did like any project I could twist into Crohn's disease, I did. Like absolutely anything I could. So then when you get to pick your thesis topic, it was like, okay, this is Crohn's disease, and then stem cells happen to be the second half of that, and that's what made the thesis.
Brilliant. And now you're working in the area of clinical trials. Professor Anthony O'Connor then, so what should we be looking out for?
Okay, so the main thing is a change in bowel habit that's sustained. I mean, tummy bugs are common. You don't need to worry about Crohn's and colitis if you've got diarrhea for 2 or 3 days. But like Alana said, I mean, when it's going on for weeks and months, that's when you need to get checked out.
And is it always is it constipation, or is it just loose stools, or both, or any change in your, I suppose any long term change in your bowel movements needs attention, even if it is not IBD. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And because we can't forget colorectal cancer as well, and particularly at the age of 50, who's a change in their bowel habit towards constipation or diarrhea, ought to have a colonoscopy. But if we look can it be constipation? It can. It's rarer for inflammatory bowel disease to present with constipation than it is to present with diarrhea, but it certainly can happen. Bleeding is a big one, okay? So not just a little bit of blood on the paper. We're talking about blood mixed in with the stool, over the top of the stool. The other thing is severe abdominal pain, cramps, weight loss. Really, I think Alana gave us a great rundown on the things to look out for there. Fatigue, of course, is another very, very important one. And as I said, we've got better tests, better non-invasive testing now. Sometimes it's very easy to rule out inflammatory bowel disease with just a look at your blood tests and a look at your stool for inflammatory substances.
Yeah, so, and we know, because we've done research on this, unfortunately, and maybe we can use the embarrassment that shouldn't be there as some sort of an excuse, but we say, right, we'll see what we're like in a month or 2 months or 3 months. A lot of us might, if we heed the signs, we might put it off and see how things pan out. And you're recommending strongly against that, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think if things are going on for longer than a couple of weeks, I think, they may not just settle of their own accord. And as I said earlier, we know that these great medications we have now, thanks to the work of our pharmaceutical scientists, I mean, they all work a bit better the sooner in the disease course you give them to.
Okay. Right. Thanks very much to both of you. We appreciate your time, Professor. It's been very informative. And thank you so much for it. I take care of yourself. Alana, thank you very much indeed for your story as well. And continued good health to you. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you, Gary.
All right, bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Mary's with us too, actually, on line one. Hi, Mary.
How are you doing, Greg?
You've had Crohn's disease now for 30 years.
30 years, Greg.
And
yeah.
What's your life like?
My life at the very start. I had it for 7 years, and I've had tests done and all that there, but they said it was IBS. So that went on for 7 years, and it's just your bowel's loose all the time. You're going to toilet all the time, maybe 8, 10, 12 times a day and during the night. So I was diagnosed anyway, and the first time that I didn't have pain was my 40th birthday. I actually was in Letterkenny Hospital, and I had an operation, and there was a blockage there, and discovered Crohn's.
Wow.
That was okay. I was delighted because they were able to put a name on what I had.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And I had lost weight. I was only about 6 stone, wow. You know, like I'm 5'7". So I was only about 6 stone. I was never heavy. I mean, heaviest was 8.5 stone anyway. But I was just a skeleton. So, cutting a long story short, anyway, we'll move on. I have had about 6 operations since that, and 63 now. And I'm on a new drug, as a fusion, a trial drug as well. I forget the name of it now because I've been on every one going. And I get up every 8 weeks in Letterkenny as a fusion. And when I'm over there getting that done, I also get, we call the banana bag. Mm. It's yellow, but it's all your vitamins because I can't produce or I can't store vitamins.
Right, okay. And do you know if this drug is working for you yet, Mary, this new drug?
Yeah, it is. It is keeping it at bay.
Right.
How long, I don't know, but it's keeping it at bay. Now, having said that, I'm only allowed 4 small meals a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more, if you call a low-fiber diet, it's more or less a white diet, if you know what I mean. It's bread and spuds and things like that there. You know, anything that's white, you can think about it. No fruit, no veg, nothing like that.
Yeah, so all the stuff we kind of are told that is good for us, you actually have to avoid, hence the banana bag, presumably.
I have to avoid it. And my own doctor in Mary Kennedy would say to me, you know, Mary, you've got to eat like KFC, you've got to eat burgers, you've got to put plenty of salt on your food. Because salt, if anybody takes salt, a lot of salt, it holds on what they've eaten.
Right.
It helps to hold on what you've eaten. You know?
What about tiredness, Mary? We heard from Alana there, who's in her early 20s. Is tiredness something that's affected you over the last 30 years?
It is, and I hate it.
Mm.
I mortally hate that there because I go to bed at night and I would say a bomb wouldn't wake me
right.
in the morning. You know, and it is very hard. And it's very hard for people to understand that, you know, that you could be chewing on your feet. But once you're up and you get that wee bit of go, you're grand. You can get around and do your best. You have good days, you have bad days. And I will say this now, I have an ileostomy. That saved my life. Because, I mean, until I had that ileostomy, well, before I had that ileostomy, as a bag, I couldn't go to the hairdressers.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get my eyes tested.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't stand my queue in the bank. I was cutting my own hair, you know.
Is this because you would have needed access to a bathroom effectively? So you were trapped
yep.
in your house, really, Mary, if the truth be told.
I was trapped.
Certainly going on an airplane or something like that or heading away would have just been impossible for you.
I would never, ever would have done anything like that, okay. ever.
So do you have a bit more freedom now, Mary, following that operation? Do you feel you have a bit more freedom?
I can tell you, anybody out there that's listening and they're afraid to get the bag on, my bag is non-reversible. Don't be afraid. It will save your life. It will give you that, it'll give you that confidence to be able to go out.
Mm.
It's clean. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's
Things
clean.
Have changed significantly,
That's it. Every second day there, and maybe if once I have a shower, I have to change it then and all that there, so...
But that becomes part of it. I mean, that's far less an inconvenience than having to stand and cut your own hair or not being able to read because you can't make it into the opticians. It's almost... And I've spoken to people too who've got a bag and that have got a bag and it becomes part of them. You know, people
that's
name them and stuff.
You're right there.
Do you have a name on yours?
You're right there.
Okay, we'll leave it at that then. Okay.
Now, at night time now, at the minute, now, I'm on what you call a TPM. That's a feed up at night time. That's to help build me up. I have a line in my arm, a pick line is called, and that feed goes up every night as a bag of like fluids.
Nutrients and
bag
stuff,
is called because it's all fat, you know. So that's 3 nights a week. So that's to help me keep the weight on. Without that, you know, I would be a lot thinner than I am. That has built me up. Now I'm 9 stone now. It's fantastic.
Brilliant, okay. And in terms of your pains, Mary, and the cramps, have they eased for you? Do you still suffer in that regard?
I'm pain-free.
Okay.
Pain-free. And for any woman out there who knows what it's like to have a baby, that's what I suffer for 7 years.
Yeah.
All the time. Wow. And I knew I was getting nothing at the end of it. That never stopped.
So
I've never stopped.
I mean, it's been a tough experience for you, Mary. But thankfully, and I hope I'm reading it right, that you, with everything you've gone through, and things aren't perfect, that you're actually in quite a good space at the moment. Then with this disease.
Oh God, I.
Good. Okay.
Oh God,
it's good to
you know. I've plenty of friends, but I've two good friends. If you know what I mean.
Lovely.
Everybody has two good friends, and that's all I need. And then I have my family, like you know.
Yeah.
And I get almost like you know yourself, but to look at it is what it is. And
but you just, I think the one thing is, I know you have get up and go, but if the energy levels were a bit higher, you'd be happier, I think.
Oh, that do you see any time that there's a holiday booked? Now, my sister booked a holiday there for me and her for baby day. I ended up, I had to go into the hospital. So just, you know, it's just like that. You can't promise anything. To anybody because you just could be sick. You just might not be able to do it.
Yeah.
Four holidays and all. I've had it just back. I remember the people waiting at the airport for me and I was taken to Vincent's Hospital in Dublin.
Okay.
And that was an olive screws of holiday. It's all paid for credit.
Oh, my word. If you'd let me know, if you'd let me know, I could have taken the seat.
If I let you know, I know. But yeah. You feel then bad if you feel letting people
know. No, but that's
what
you mentioned, good friends and family. And that's good friends and family understand. And I think that's why they're... You're good friends. And do you have to stay relaxed, Mary? Does, you know, stress trigger things for you?
Do you see if you've got, if you let things stress you, you know, or worry about a thing, you know, you won't really, you know, you wouldn't feel well at all. But look, if there's something that's stressing me and I can do it, something about it, I'll do it there and then.
Okay.
Because to stop myself stressing, do you know what I mean? If it's not, just put it back in my head. There's nothing I can do about that.
Right. Okay. You know. Right, listen. It's a fascinating insight into it, Mary. You've put in a tough 30 years by the sounds of it. So I'm pleased that if things seem a little bit brighter now than they would have in the past, being a prisoner in your house, like
the range is all up now. Like during the 30s parties, you know, when it's great and they don't have to look at me so far, and you know, things like that.
Exactly. Well, listen. Great to chat to you, Mary. You sound like a lovely person. It's been lovely chatting to you.
You're very welcome.
All right, bye-bye, Mary. Take care. Much. All right, you're welcome back to the programme. We're joined on it now by Jared, whose son Jamie is 4 years old and has autism spectrum disorder. Jared, thank you very much for joining us.
How are you doing, Greg? How's
I'm fine? Okay, I'm okay. Right, your son Jamie currently at preschool and you're looking to get him into national school in the coming September. There's complications though, is there?
There is, that's right, Greg. Jamie, at the moment, as you say, is at preschool. He was diagnosed with autism in 2021. So, like, we haven't been preschool now and we're looking to the national school education. We have a great school here in the town of Rafoe where we live, St. Junan's. St. Junan's they have a classroom here. They have a sensory garden, a sensory room. They have a toilet block built, and they want to turn that into an ASD class. The school, the Board of Governors is behind it. The school's fully behind it. But the department has turned them down now for the resourcing. Look, everything's there, but by the teacher, and they won't give them the resources. For us, like we're kind of our biggest problem is like we'll have to take Jamie out of the community. The department's coming and saying, either there's classes in Dromore, there's space free in St. Johnson and all, but we don't want to have to put our son on the bus and take him out of the community to a different school.
Mm. His siblings also in that school. His siblings also in that school, isn't he or she?
That's right. We have a sister, Emily, is at the school, and also his two cousins. Are also at the school, you know, and we have a good rapport with the school, and they know us, they know the family, and you know, it's a crying shame, Greg. They're taking them out of schools, they're taking them out of the area, and they're a different school, you know. Like take it for example for with Emily, like she goes down to the shop with me, and we're in the shop, and she's saying, "Oh, look, there's wee Mickey from my class," and they're waving, they're speaking, they're coming out, and they're all happy, you know. Like Emily was at school the last day, and she come back, and she's. She was saying her full football club was in doing PE with him. You know, I want to join the football club. And she joined the football club now. We're friends. Like, Jamie's going to miss all that. He's going to be taken out of the community because of that.
You know, not that it's the key issue here, but how far would the journey be to Convoy or any other schools that have currently the facilities available?
There's Convoy's beside us. Like, it's not far away from us by no means. But there's only one space there available this year. Jimmy's looking to get the following year. I was counting there, the department said there's 8 spaces available. Mm-hmm. Like from St. Junan's alone, we know that there's 3 students looking for an ASD class. Add one more to that, that's half the space is gone right away. Mm-hmm. Like down the country, Greg, they're crying out for spaces. They can't get it. The department's actually making schools. They're forcing them. No, I don't know if forcing the right word, but they're making them turn classes into ASD classes. Mm-hmm. So like, why not be proactive instead of reactive? Like, why not come along and say, "Hey, right, here's a school looking to go. We only have 8 spaces available in this area." That's not going to last long. Let's get another one up and running and stay ahead of the curve.
Yeah, and of
especially
course, and
see what's happening.
And as you mentioned, it's the school within his community. His sister's already there, and it wouldn't require any bus trip. And you're saying, Jared, that this is Everyone agrees that this is the way forward. It's just a sanction from the Department of Education that is stopping this happening for Jamie in September.
No, that's my understanding, Greg. Okay. The school has the building, the school has the classroom there. They have everything there ready to go. All they need is just the funding for the teacher. And like you said, we're paying buses, tax, insurance, and diesel and buses, and there's a driver and a chaperone. You know, when you take all that into it, well, is there going to be much of a difference altogether? Like?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, we're busting them up there. You know?
Yeah, right. This issue has been raised by Deputy Pierce Stoddard, who is with us as well. Pierce, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
I presume you don't think Jared's request is unreasonable.
No, I think it's really encouraging to hear Jared out this morning and you know, put a voice to the statistics behind this, because it's really important that people understand what this means and what it really means in terms of segregation of children who are growing up in a local community where their national school is there, as Jared said, where the board of management, where the teachers and all the staff of the school are more than happy, more than willing, and more than capable of ensuring that all students in that catchment area are able to be taught in the local school, where brothers and sisters can attend school together and not having to see, you know, a brother or a sister leave to go to make a, you know, what is a 24-kilometer round trip every day, and you know, young kids asking, you know, why can't my brother or my sister attend the same school as us? And I think we will, Greg, I think we'll look back on these days and say that was wrong and we shouldn't have allowed it to happen.
Am I correct in the reading of your comments that it's not just Jamie that would benefit either if there was the right sanctioning from the Department of Education, or the particularly the Minister for Special Education and Inclusion? Ironically, you know, this, we are talking about special education and inclusion here, and yet the responsible minister, Josefa Madigan, at this time says no extra staff could be provided. So what is that department for if not for this purpose? But anyway, it's not just Jamie that might benefit from the sanctioning of positions.
No, it's far from just Jamie. It's there are a number of other children who have diagnoses who will be enrolling in that school, or who are currently in the school, could benefit from this classroom also. And that's very clear that it's you know, that there's a number of people who could avail of this. There's also students, you know, who in any school who gets a diagnosis. Sometimes it's later on. It doesn't happen before you go into primary school. And as a result, if you get a diagnosis, you may have a recommendation for an ASD class because there is no class in that school. Students have to leave, and that's not acceptable. It's just not acceptable in this day and age. And, you know, in some of these cases, Greg, when we're kind of campaigning for ASD classrooms, you know, it takes a lead-in period because you have to build an extra classroom. You have to get your design, your contractor, your tender, and then you have to build the additional classroom. The issue here is the classroom is there. It's a fantastic space. I visited the school there in the last 2 weeks. They have the toilet block right outside. They have the yard there. They have done everything in this school. They have a sensory class in this room in this school. They have a sensory garden in this school. This shows you how inclusive this school is trying to be for all of the children, despite the fact that they haven't got the sanction. So, you know, this is a very, very simple issue to resolve. This will benefit, you know, three or four children over the next number of years, and possibly more as more and more issues come to light. And it's really important, and I think people really need to take a stand on this here.
What is next then? Because we have heard Jared speaking out on behalf of Jamie and others. You have raised this issue directly with the minister. Let me remind you of their title, for Special Education and Inclusion. She has said for now extra staff will not be provided. So what is next then? I mean, obviously you can raise the issue again, but how do we progress this? Because I am sick and tired of stories, and we had another one earlier on the programme today, where children are being excluded for no good reason. They're being treated differently. They're being separated from their peers. They're being made feel different. You know, that should be against everything that we stand for in this country.
Absolutely. And look, I did raise this with Josepha Madigan yesterday. And in fairness to the minister's going to read out, as she did yesterday, the script that she gets from her officials based on what has happened on the ground. And we don't dispute the facts. We don't dispute the fact that there's 8 positions available, but it's 24 kilometres round trip that the child has to do. The additional cost, the additional chaperone, all of that. But the point I was making to her yesterday, and that's why she said she'd look at it again, is should we be segregating children on the basis of one has a diagnosis of autism and the other doesn't?
No,
should we be splitting families? We should not. And okay, in fairness, and I've interacted with Josepha Madigan in relation to the issue with ASD classroom in Creasla, and we found a resolution to it. And, you know, I believe that she's a person who wants to see more of these classrooms open. As Jared said, we've had to pass legislation in the Dáil to force ASD classrooms on schools. This is a school community that has the room, that has the space, that has the sensory issues, that the sensory guard and the sensory area, that is willing to make sure that every child is not segregated, that every child is given every single opportunity in their local area.
Okay.
And we just need a bit of common sense here. We're going to get here in the future. I don't think we'll ever talk about this in the future, because I think we'll look back and say, how did we allow that to happen? And it shouldn't happen for Jared,
I mean, we
for
reflect
son,
on,
Jimmy, or any other child.
Exactly. We reflect on our history, thinking we can change history right now. We're living in it at the moment. Pierce, thank you very much for your time. Deputy Pierce Doherty, and also Jared, dad of Jamie there. Okay, it's such a busy show today that we have unfortunately ran out of time. Just to remind you, if you've missed any of today's programme, and I'd encourage you to not miss any of it, but if you happen to, you can listen back to the podcast. It's available from about 12:30 on our website, split into 3 easy-to-consume hours for you. We also rebroadcast the show tonight at 1 o'clock, and you can watch it back at your leisure on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, or on Facebook. But that is where we have to leave it. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show, along with Niamh, who worked on the show as well and worked with our social media. Stay tuned, because coming up very shortly, in fact, after the news, Michaela Clark is around the Northwest. But for me, Greg Hughes and the team, chat to you tomorrow morning at 9.